Good morning. So the title of my little homily is From Justice to Love. And very quickly, you can sort of seize the essence of it by thinking that justice has to do with parts and particulars that are not in a completely unified situation. Justice has this little measured piece in relation to this. But love is the opposite in the sense that it's comprehensive. It doesn't have those sharp limits or separation. So it's always been difficult for people to love because we can only handle one or two pieces at a time or small parts, and we can't really take in the total. Never could. Still can't. But so we're looking for ways of sort of suggesting or reminding us of the unqualified, unconditioned, unlimited reality, which of course is divinity. One kind of new reminder in our culture comes from Carl Jung, who wrote brilliantly about synchronicity. And I'm reminded of it, I was reminded of it, when I received the a program for this morning's liturgy, because I had selected as my opening passage, which I'm about to read, a little passage from Julian of Norwich. But when I was asked if I wanted to make any suggestion to call to a Charles for music, I said, oh no, I wouldn't know how to do that. Anything would be fine. I'm sure they will know what to do. Charles will know what to do, etc. And then when I opened the booklet, there was a song, which a hymn, which we're going to hear, using the words of Julian of Norwich. So that's only a small synchronicity. It doesn't change. It doesn't tilt, you know, the planet. It doesn't, you know, transform the whole of humankind. It doesn't even transform me for more than 10 seconds. But it was a gentle and kindly reminder of that, you know, we are not alone and not disconnected. At least nothing so much as we think we are. We are more connected than our worldview allows us to think. So we have to constantly go against the dominant view coming from 17th century science and philosophy, and think and act in a consciousness which is unified and vast and unlimited. So we have this little connection between what I was thinking and the hymn by Julian of Norwich. So here's the passage that I'm beginning with. God, out of wisdom we all came, in whom we all be enclosed, into whom we all wend. For ere that he made us, he loved us. And when we were made, we loved him. So love was in the beginning, but it's had a kind of a hard biography. And so it's these passages from Swedenborg and Paul and Matthew are trying to help us out. So the passage from Emanuel Swedenborg explains how he's unhappy about various teachers just individuals who think that something good or something evil is somehow a small isolate, separate from a full life and a full expression of divinity in the world. So this is similar to his concern or his argument against the idea of faith only, that faith can't be separated from works, from charity, from active love. This is a a separation that is untrue to divinity, because after all, divinity doesn't just sit there. It created, and it's still creating. And you heard these wonderful words. We sung the wonderful words from Francis. We want to be conscious that how the divinity gave us the sun and the fire, and the birds and the animals, and the little bird up there. I thought was very sweet to be looking at when we were singing Saint Francis's words. So, in a way, I'd like us to think about this passage of Swedenborg, which you have in front of you, and then to go back and look at Matthew and Paul, Matthew being the second reading, but that's where I took the title from justice to love. So Matthew says, "You have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth." Actually, I'm not sure that's exactly in the Hebrew scriptures. There's something like that, but not quite. But it's the beginning, after all. You know, Revelation comes slowly. It doesn't all happen, you know, in the 1500 BC. We're evolving. We're working on it. Maybe we're not acting better, but we're certainly getting a better sense of the connectedness of everything and how hard it is to sustain that. So he says, we're not doing an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist one who is evil. And if anyone would sue you and take your coat, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go 2 miles. And if one begs from you, give them what they ask for. And then it says, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. After all, he says, even Gentiles and Greeks, and they do these things. Now I'm raising the level altogether. In a way, this raising to the level of love is not a commandment. I don't know if you can command love. Kind of interesting thing to think about. You can command justice. And justice, after all, is one thing at a time. But love is not limited to that action, because that action is within a context of larger and larger and deeper, all the way to the infinity and unlimitedness of divinity itself, of Christ who loves humanity and the earth. So then if we look at this, Paul is terrific on love, as you know. We have this marvelous passage from 1 Corinthians 3. God's temple is holy. It is comprehensive. It has the personal quality of love. And when he's speaking against wisdom, it's a little confusing or misleading. I think it's pretty clear that he's speaking against the Stoics. That is to say, the dominant philosophical view in Corinth, in Greece at that time. And the Stoics were marvelous at being, as we say, Stoic, still receiving, not screaming and banging, but receiving what is in any case necessary. But it's a little hard to find love and kind of profoundly personal, relational quality. It's a little bit cold. And so, although it's wise, I think it's wise, Paul is trying to emphasize that it doesn't have the quality that we observe in Jesus Christ, that is this total outpouring of devotion to the least of the brethren. So what he's really saying is the Stoics don't know that God so loved the world that he sent his son, who then offered himself as a sacrifice. That's not explicit in Stoic. Actually, Stoicism has a huge impact on Christianity. But Paul at this point is making a contrast. And then, of course, we move to just 10 chapters later, we have the amazing passage, a favorite of weddings. If I have eloquence of persons and angels, but speak without love, I am a gong booming and a cymbal clashing. I mean, so that And this is exactly what Emanuel Swedenborg is saying. If I have faith, but I don't have love, and if I don't do works, if I don't do charity, if I don't express it, it would be like God the Creator being able to create, but just sort of sitting it out, not quite getting around to making a cosmos and making it possible for the plants to evolve into animals and animals into people and people able to then understand not only human and earth, but cosmos and divinity and all kinds of amazing things. If I have the gift of prophecy, which is not a small thing after all, understanding all the mysteries that there are, we're really raising the level now, and knowing everything, and I have faith in all its fullness. This is quite impressive. To enough to move mountains, but without love, then I am nothing at all. Pretty clear. All right. So love does not come to an end. See, that's where it's different from justice. Justice, you have a certain conflict, a certain problem, there's a solution, it's settled. That can be commanded and adjudicated and fixed. But love has to keep receiving and giving. In short, there are three things that last: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. I want to add a passage from the Epistle of James, 2:20. Faith without good deeds is useless. Pretty strong. It is by doing good, and not only by believing, that a person is justified. This is all, in the Swedenborg case, it's aimed at certain Protestant teachers, particularly Luther and Calvin. But in the case of James, it's aimed at a certain view which comes through the Jewish and the early Christian community, where faith was so powerful and so transformative. But then it really needs to go the next step. So continuing with my little synchronicity, I had the idea of starting with Julian, the little verse that I read. But as the theme is on love, I want to read the second half of this amazing prayer by Julian, who I'd like you to picture being this little, she's an anchorite. So there's a little, it's not quite a cave, it's like a little bit like a cave, except it's built on the side of a cathedral. This is in the middle of the 14th century, where she lived alone and prayed and worshipped God and wrote statements about love, which she knew about from her personal experience. So this I take to be a divinity in its many expressions. So it is I, the strength and goodness of fatherhood. It is I, the wisdom of motherhood. Is that Sophia coming through that Christian line? A little bit suppressed, but it's there. It is I, the light and grace of holy love. It is I, the Trinity. It is I, the unity. I am the sovereign goodness in all things. It is I who teach you to love. It is I who teach you to desire. It is I who am the reward of all true desiring. All shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of thing shall be well.